Thank you all for joining our call today with Jill Faraday-Lloyd and Carrie Shopman. I am Jill Orlando, Relationship Manager with the Shantz Mantino Group. Now I would like to hand the call over to Jill Faraday-Lloyd.
Thank you, Jill, and welcome all. Thanks so much for joining us today. My name is Jill Faraday-Lloyd, and I am an advisor at UBS Private Wealth and the Shantz Mantione Group. And I'm delighted to have Carrie Shefman here, who's one of my favorite people at UBS. Carrie is the head of the UBS Women's Segment, so he's interesting, and I learn something every time I have her with me. And we work quite closely together. Now, while the Shantz Mantione Group works with families and executives and business owners, my practice within the team is focused almost exclusively on women who are leading their families, leading companies, or leading teams. And it really aligns with my personal mission to inspire women to have agency with their capital in all of its forms, their personal, their professional, and their financial capital, and to use their assets wisely and in a manner that reflects their values. Carrie will certainly talk about this, but right now there is an enormous wealth transfer that's occurring. By the year 2030, women will own two-thirds of our nation's wealth. It's through our own wealth generation and through a double inheritance windfall. So it is a particularly magical moment in our history to see how much money and power is moving into the hands of women. So the research that UBS does through their Own Your Worth group is critical for us to understand how we can work closely with female clients and what they're looking for. So without further ado, I am so happy to have you here. Carrie, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast, Jill. It's great to be with you yet again.
Oh, thanks. I think it would be helpful if you just sort of gave an overview of your role within UBS and what it is that you do.
Sure, absolutely. I know I've been on in the past, but as a refresher or for anyone who's new to these calls, happy to share more about what my team and I do. So my role at UBS is that I lead a team called the Women's Segment, and our team is really responsible for the development and implementation of our strategy as a firm to address the unique financial needs that women have throughout the course of their lifetimes. Of course, recognizing that women are a population, not a segment, and that each of us, as women, as men, as investors, have different goals, different needs, different concerns, different financial situations, money stories. And that really factors into everything that we do. And ultimately, we want to help women navigate their financial lives and prepare for their financial futures. And we really see an inextricable link between helping women achieve greater financial well-being and hopefully helping them to achieve greater overall well-being as well. And so we do that through a variety of different ways. We do research. Jill, you mentioned our Own Your Worth research, which is an extensive body of research we've done over many years, other supporting resources, educational content, events, podcasts like this one, and more. And I would say, you know, really in conclusion, our goal is to bring more women to the financial table, support women who are at the financial table, and ultimately also make that table a more inclusive place for women.
Amen. Love that, Carrie. Thank you. You know, the Own Your Worth research has been around for, I don't know, what, 5 years or so?
Yep, exactly. Going on 6 years.
Wow. And it was really one of the things that helped, that made me want to come to work at UBS, was to see how seriously the desire of the firm was to truly understand their clients and their needs. You mentioned it, the research and its background, but before we dive in, would you actually talk about the catalyst for the research?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad to hear that, Jill. I know we're so happy to have you at UBS and to be such a champion of the work that we're doing each and every day. And really, I would say the goal was, you know, 5-6 years ago, as we were thinking about how to best serve women and how to think about women's financial journeys, we wanted to actually understand and hear from real women around the country from all different backgrounds, financial situations, ages, generations, what is most important to them when they think about their financial lives? And what are the things that are important to them? What are they concerned about? What do they maybe wish they had done differently? Or what do they want to be doing when it comes to their wealth management? And really, so I would say the catalyst was twofold for the Own Your Worth research. The first is that women are often sole financial decision makers in the U.S. So 80% of women at some point in their lives will be solely responsible for managing their financial well-being due to a variety of different demographic trends, an increase in divorce rates over the years, the fact that women have tend to have on average longer life expectancies than their male counterparts, decreasing rates of marriage, more women choosing to remain single. So we found that 80% of women would be in a position in which they had to manage their finances on their own at some point. And then we coupled that with the second sort of twin engine behind the research, which is what you just mentioned, Jill, in your opening, which is that women currently control and are on track to control more wealth than ever before here in the U.S. and around the world. So you have these sort of twin forces of women as sole financial decision makers and women also as true leaders in the amount of wealth that they control and are on track to control. And so that made us really take a step back and say, okay, so how do women think about their wealth? How do they think about money? How do they think about making major financial decisions? And we've used those insights to inform our approach and to figure out how we can best support women wherever they may be on their financial journey. So kind of taking a step back, we started the research by actually speaking with women who had found themselves in a position in which they were the sole financial decision maker. So we first spoke with hundreds and hundreds of women who had either gone through a divorce or who had been widowed back in 2017. And we heard from those women that the vast majority wished they had been more involved in financial decisions while they were part of a couple. Mm. We then expanded the research to look at women in couples and found that about 50% of women in heterosexual couples and 40% of women in same-sex couples told us that they deferred the major financial decisions within their households to their partner or spouse. And then among single women who were not in a partnership and had not been married, we heard from them that they struggled with financial confidence, particularly in comparison to their male peers when making long-term financial decisions. So our goal is really to change that dynamic and to increase the level of women's financial participation and to support women, again, on their financial journey.
I mean, the work is so important and it's so powerful. And it's difficult sometimes to engage with money if it's something that maybe you weren't brought up talking about, aren't comfortable with. You mentioned the financial confidence. But there are some things that I think we're seeing that are really enabling or encouraging women to come to the financial table. I really want to talk about the latest report from 2022, from this year, which we're calling Women on Purpose. This, I think, is the key to a lot of those issues you discussed, and I'm hoping you can talk a little bit about it and what you explored.
Sure, absolutely. I'll start with sort of setting the stage for what our latest research this year did seek to kind of understand and uncover, which is, you know, we recognize that the last few years have been profoundly tumultuous, to say the least. It's hard to even just, you know, describe the last few years in a few words only. And, you know, whether it was, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic, geopolitical and economic uncertainty, a rise in social activism, I think we can all agree, regardless of each of our own experiences or opinions on the events of the last few years, that it's been a catalyst for reevaluation, really on every level for each of us in some way, shape, or form. And so our goal with this latest research was to see how did the events of the last few years impact women specifically. We wanted to understand how the events had impacted women to, you know, think about or maybe reassess what's most important to them, how they make decisions, how they think about their money, their wealth, their time, their resources, their expertise. Are they making decisions differently? Are they more focused on aligning those decisions with their values? And could women really be, and our hypothesis was, that women were really the catalyst to affect more positive change across society and to try to make more of a difference in leading more purposeful and intentional lives post-COVID. And so that's really what we set out to understand and uncover.
I mean, I think that's so interesting because anecdotally, and you and I have talked about this, during the pandemic was a time in which a lot of couples came to me, and the wife was really the advocate here, saying, you know, are we going to be okay? No, really, are we going to be okay? And, you know, normally if they would have had that conversation with their male spouse who was handling the finances, you would have been like, yeah, gone to work. But because they were all living, you know, everybody was living together 24/7, and we were all going through such a scary time, there was no way to get away from the person who kept saying, are we okay? Right. And so what I found anecdotally is that why were really coming to me and saying, we don't really have a plan. We need to know we have a plan. And I need to know that I can understand what that plan is, and I want to be involved. So from a pure catalytic standpoint, I understand how incredibly important the last few years have been in waking women up to like the security of their money or the power of their money. So what I really want you to do now is talk about what you found out.
Absolutely. And I would just add, Jill, that it's, you know, it's beyond the anecdotal stories that you and I have shared, and that, you know, we even did research with women and men during the pandemic and heard that the vast majority, in particular, among of heterosexual couples were talking about money more, revisiting things like estate plans, wills, important documents, financial plans, talking more about money more openly with children as well. So the research actually does speak to exactly what you're talking about, which is this sort of catalytic shift in just be having, as difficult as they can often be, or as taboo as money, you know, conversations may still be, that those conversations were happening more because of the events of the last year, people being in closer quarters, all of the uncertainty that surrounded it. So that also is part of what led us to this latest research. And so in this latest 2022 research, as you mentioned, titled Women on Purpose, I would say what was really exciting is that our hypothesis did indeed bear out. So 80% of women told us that the events of the past few years have made them reassess what's most important to them. And about 3/4 of women said they're more committed than ever before to making a difference.
Woo! Love that.
Yeah. So I think that there's this profound opportunity that we're seeing where women are really paving the way, sort of coming out of, you know, the darkness of the last few years, to try to find that light, to find the opportunity to affect change, whether within their own families, for themselves, for their communities, for the world around them, for society. So that was really, I would say, generally the main finding. And then if we kind of drill down, what we really found is that women are more determined than ever before to using their financial clout, their valuable time, and their considerable purchasing power to affect positive change wherever they can. So what we heard is that women have increased the amount of money that they're giving to charities and causes that they care about, increased the amount of time that they spend volunteering, the amount of expertise that they lend to organizations who may rely upon them. We found that women are more interested in pursuing ESG and sustainable investing, aligning their investments with their values. And I would say women are also really thinking about purchasing power, both in terms of how they spend, but also how they earn money. So women told us that they're much more likely now to buy from companies that align with their values, whose mission statements might align with theirs, that they're making career decisions to find more meaningful, more purposeful work. And ultimately, I would say, sort of to kind of wrap it all up, we found that the vast majority of women see a strong correlation between participating in major financial decisions and the ability to actually lead a more intentional life and affect that positive change that they wish to see around them.
Wow. It's so encouraging. You know, I could just have a very select sample group with my clients and the people in my network, but they are real doers. Again, when I talk about trying to encourage women to have agency with their personal, professional, and financial capital. I mean, the personal side is how do you spend your time? What are you reading? What are you interested in? The professional side is where can you have influence? And that could be, you know, political clout. And then, of course, the financial side is, A, what are you buying? Who are you buying it from? How are you investing? And what companies do you or don't you want to work for, invest in? So I would say anecdotally also, the vast majority of the female clients that I'm talking to have a real opinion about the stocks in their portfolio and that they need to adhere to their value system and what they care about. So there's this overlay of sustainable investing that's coming through nearly with every single client that I talk with. So I'm curious about, you know, you talked about the valuable time, the purchasing power, the financial clout. What are the implications of this research?
Sure. And I think that the implications are vast. I mean, first of all, you know, part of the reason that we embarked on this research 5 years ago and have continued to expand it each year is specifically to your point, which is that we hope that the women with whom we work or with whom you work see themselves in this research in some way, shape, or form, and that it also then helps to drive real meaningful action aligned with what our female clients and prospective clients are thinking about, what's most important to them, that we're able to reach women with this sort of clarion call around the messaging of own your worth in whatever way, shape, or form that works for you as an individual. And I would say, you know, while the implications I think are vast with this latest report, there are some specific, I call them kind of on-ramps, if you will, to greater engagement that I think could allow us as a society and allow women to have even greater impact, regardless of sort of where you are on your financial journey or what specifically about these findings resonate with you. So one of the things that was really interesting, you know, I mentioned earlier, Jill, our original research found that about 50% of women in heterosexual couples told us over the years that they're not involved in major long-term financial decisions. Mm. And yet among all women, including women in couples and including women who might defer those longer-term financial decisions, 90% of women in our research told us that they are equally or more involved in charitable giving than their partner. So they're either equally involved or often even take the lead in these decisions. So right. We see this as an opportunity for a really deeper discussion and to open the door to more conversations and more topics sort of at the money table, knowing that women are really leading in this space around charitable giving and philanthropic decisions within their families. I would say
I'm going to go off script a little bit, because for me that's like women write the checks in the family, right? They buy the cars, mm-hmm. they purchase the goods, they write the philanthropic checks, they're making those decisions. Mm-hmm. So what have we learned about how to get them to the table to talk about their investments?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the person and I think it depends on the situation, but I think that's really what we wanted to kind of understand with this research is, are there specific things that based on significant research, there are sort of trends or key findings that seem to resonate that we can then use to help increase women's financial participation in broader decisions. So I would say certainly leading with charitable giving while also avoiding, you know, I think that there's a lot of stereotypes out there of, oh, women, you know, are more focused on charitable giving or philanthropy. And certainly we don't want to fall into the stereotype. But as I mentioned before, the research really does bear out that 90% of women in couples, including those who might defer on other financial decisions, are equally or more involved in charitable giving than their partner. So the research really does speak for itself that this could be an opportunity. And then how can your investment strategy, how can your long-term financial planning allow you to have more impact with what you're donating, how you're donating, you know, all of those different things, and certainly working with our fantastic partners on the Family Advisory and Philanthropy Services team, for example, or our advanced planning team to really understand the full impact of the dollars and the things that are, you know, financial vehicles that are donated or given to charity or used with an impact focus. And I would say similarly, Jill, to your point, to your question, the other piece that, and the other on-ramp, which I think is exactly aligned with what you're asking, was around sustainable investing and aligning values with investments. So the vast majority of women that we surveyed told us in this latest research that they find ESG and sustainable investing appealing as a strategy. And actually the vast majority of women that we surveyed said that they expected ESG and sustainable investing to have comparable or even better returns to than traditional investing. Mm-hmm. So that was really promising. And yet there was this gap because we actually found that less than half of the women surveyed actually told us that they held ESG or sustainable investments currently. So how can we close that gap, recognizing that so many women told us they're interested in sustainable investing, and yet we're not actually seeing that from an action perspective. So is that another opportunity to bring more women to the investment table to appeal to what they may be interested in discussing and focusing on? So that would
and
be
it's
another
getting them from intention to action. And how exactly. can advisors help them get there? How can we get from A to Z?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I would say, even kind of taking another step back, and again, the implications, there are so many from this report. You know, if you move away from charitable giving, if you move away from sustainable investing, so kind of moving away from the financial side, I also think that the implications for all of us potentially as employers and employees are very interesting as well, because we found that so many women want to align their career decisions with their values. And in fact, particularly among millennial women, 40% of millennial women told us that they switched jobs in the last 2 years to find more meaningful work. So
wow.
Whether you are running a business, running a team, running a company, leading a nonprofit, whatever it might be, leading in your community, how are you thinking about being a purpose-driven organization to really attract and retain talent? And how are you engaging women as trailblazers in this post-COVID landscape of affecting positive change and looking for more intentionality in the lives that they lead, the work that they're doing? So that would be another kind of implication. And then I would say lastly, women, we found that women who lead in making financial decisions, so the other half of women who do not defer those long-term financial decisions, we saw that they are really paving the way too when it comes to affecting positive change through using sophisticated philanthropic vehicles like donor-advised funds or private foundations, pursuing venture capital or venture philanthropy. So we see the link even more clearly between the impact that they're able to have and their understanding of and engagement in their financial situation and long-term financial goals, and how that sort of concept of purpose fits in as they act as role models. And I'm sure, Jill, you see this in your own community as well, among your friends, your family, the women with whom you work.
Oh, absolutely. I have a daughter who's 20 years old. She goes to college and she's really a fabulous student. She's a double major and has a minor, and she's in a rock band. And I mean, like, she's just living the college dream. And I went to visit her recently for Parents Weekend. And as I was leaving, she sort of leaned over and started crying. And I was like, "What's wrong?" She's like, "I'm going to miss you." I said, no, really, what's wrong?" And she said, "You know, Mom, I'm like flat out working really, really hard. I love everything I do. I kind of feel like not a lot of my friends are as busy as I am. And, you know, I've got two jobs and the band and the double major, blah, 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 blah." And she's like, and I said to her, "Listen, you know, your dad and I always said that if your job gets in the way of your schoolwork, then we would, you know, help support you a little bit more." And my daughter, gosh, she's so great. She just turned to me and she goes, "Mom, I don't need your money. I just needed to complain a little bit." And what she told me there was really, "I don't need a handout. I need a hand to hold." And what I'm seeing her do in particular is that she's set up a Roth IRA with the extra money that she's making, and she's investing in a way that reflects her values. This is a 20-year-old kid. And I'm so proud of her values in terms of how hard she wants to work and that she knows that she should be supporting herself, but also the way that she's thinking about investing the money that she's made, you know, that's hard earned, and getting those messages, that young people are getting those messages early on, is just super inspiring.
That's amazing. And I know she has the best role model in you as her mom. And I think very promising to see. And I hear that a lot about Gen Z in terms of how they've been impacted by the pandemic, how they've been impacted by the events of the last 2 years. Our research really looked at millennial women as sort of the youngest age demographic, but I'd be very curious to see sort of how Gen Z continues to rise in their careers as they're graduating college, entering the workforce, and really thinking about how they live a life with purpose, how they find their passions, how they don't compromise their values. And I think that each small, and this is really what the report is so much about, each small act, each individual decision, each, you know, whether it's investing her money like your daughter is doing at age 20, or donating, you know, $10 to a friend who's running the marathon for charity, or some of the even bigger philanthropic decisions, charitable decisions, being on the board of a nonprofit, volunteering every week, whatever it might be, each of these decisions and acts that we can take can ultimately create this large tidal wave effect mm-hmm. that I think will be really positive as we look ahead. So I think it's great to hear what your daughter is doing. I think it aligns so nicely with the research and what we've found. And then I think it's a question of, again, as you mentioned, Jill, turning intent into action. And how can we help women do that, whether it's a conversation with the Family Advisory and Philanthropy Services team, whether it's the question of revisiting your financial plan, thinking about, you know, involving children in your own decisions and trying to set that, you know, act as a role model for the next generation. So there's so much that we can kind of think about in response to the findings of this report.
I agree. I loved reading it. I've shared it. If anybody would like a copy of this report, I'll be posting it on LinkedIn, but we can also get it to you. You can email Jill Orlando. But for right now, I wanted to thank you, Carrie, so much for once again joining me. You're just such a joy, and the knowledge that you bring to UBS and to our clients is incredibly valuable. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's so great to be with you. And I would just add, if anyone wants to learn more about the work of our team, you can find more at ubs.com/women. That's ubs.com/women.
Fantastic. And I want to thank you all for listening and wish everybody a very, very happy holiday. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks again.